It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. In 2018, around 250 of Wisconsin farmers applied through the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection to grow industrial hemp in the Badger State. This year, more than 1,400 applied. We're taking a closer look at the market through a new research project at UW-Madison, and we'll talk about the growing pains within the hemp industry. We're talking to Shelby Ellison. She's an assistant faculty associate in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison and is coordinating hemp research and extension efforts through the university. Are you a hemp grower in Wisconsin? How's your crop doing? Is the job what you expected? What struggles and challenges have you had so far? Hemp growers, where are your farms in Wisconsin? What are you going to do with your product, and how concerned are you about the upcoming harvest? If you're someone who wants to start growing hemp, what has held you back from getting started? All those questions, fodder for our discussion here this hour on The Morning Show. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org. Shelby Ellison, welcome to The Morning Show.
Hi, John. Glad to be here.
In Wisconsin, well, we know what soybean and corn growing looks like, but what does a hemp farm look like? How does it compare with other more conventional crops?
It looks a lot more variable at this time because many people growing hemp are doing so for the first time. The experts are doing it for their second time, so it's very, very small plots with a, you know, 10 to 100 plants all the way up to 100 acres, so extremely variable.
You've said that, how do farmers get the get started with seeds, or I understand seeds or clones are how we start growing hemp. What does that mean? How does that work?
Yeah, so the first thing to establish is there's kind of three different hemp markets. So you can grow hemp for fiber production, which is using the stalk. You can use it for grain production, which is using the seed. Or the very popular, most common use this year is to grow for CBD production, which is extracting oil from unpollinated female flowers in the plant. So that most popular, so the seed and the stalk, growing for those types, you would source seeds and plant a field with a tractor, and it's a very high density planting. But if you're growing for the CBD production, you have to either source seeds that you would probably start in a greenhouse, and you would have seedlings, which then would be transplanted later on, about 4 weeks later, or you would buy clones, which are cuttings from what is known as a mother plant to guarantee that they're female plants, and those cuttings would then be propagated in a greenhouse and transplanted to a field.
So where are farmers getting their seeds or clones from?
So a lot of the materials, the seed materials, the clones are coming from places where hemp is more established. So a lot of people are ordering their seeds and such from states like Oregon or Colorado, where they have these, they've been growing hemp for a long period of time. So you're searching either variety names that you've heard of or searching things like hemp clones and finding these seed dealers in these other locations. This year, more and more people are starting to produce more seeds and clones in Wisconsin. So I would imagine for the spring of 2020, there'll be more of a Wisconsin market for purchasing these things. And also at UW, we're trying to establish a seed certification program where we can guarantee that the seeds and clones that are being purchased are what they claim to be.
We have a question from John in Waupaca. John, good morning. Welcome to The Morning Show.
Good morning. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you. What's your question?
I, as a private individual, I have plants like, say, put it in a potted plant or in my garden.
We're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. I think John's question is, can he grow a hemp in his garden? Is that legal?
So So you have to have a license through the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Products. So you need to have a license to grow hemp that you plan to harvest. There is feral hemp growing across the state, and those plants, if you just leave them be, are fine. But if you're growing it to use the product, even in your own personal garden, you need a license and registration through DACAP.
Okay, John, thanks so much for that question. If you've got a question about hemp production in Wisconsin, this is the hour for you, 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org. Hemp has a lot of uses. We've talked about, in general terms, some of those, but what are we planning to use hemp for in the state?
Yeah, so along with the infancy of the crop, we kind of lack the infrastructure right now to process hemp into all of the many thousands and thousands of potential products that can be made. A lot of those come from the stock. Historically, Wisconsin grew hemp for fiber, and that fiber came from the stock, and the inside of the stock is material called hird, which can be processed into things like hempcrete, which is an insulation and a building material, or you can press oil for the seed for various, potentially consumer products. Right now it's going into a lot of things like cosmetics and lotions. But as I said earlier, the number one thing is going to be that CBD production. So that is going to go off to a processing facility, which will, you'll have the dried floral material more than likely that's shipped to the processor, and that will be extracted using either ethanol or CO2, and then that oil will be sold back to the farmer or sold to the processor. And that's kind of the CBD oils, the tinctures, the lotions that you see popping up in every store.
And we are going to be talking about those CBD products after the news at 7:30. Annie from Reedsburg couldn't stay with us earlier. She called in to ask why hemp isn't being used to produce more paper or tissue products rather than using trees.
Yeah, I mean, that is an excellent question. And it's just because we don't have the facilities right now to process the hemp into those products. So there are very few hemp fiber processing facilities in the nation. They're mostly abroad in Europe and in China. So until those facilities are built, we don't have a place to do that. One thing that we can do is use some of the other facilities that process different types of paper products and see if they can be modified to accommodate hemp. But that's a few years away for sure.
We're talking about the hemp industry in Wisconsin. Shelby Ellison is an assistant faculty associate in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. You can find links to information about hemp farming, including upcoming field days, on the morning show page at WPR.org. Our conversation is going to continue in a moment, but we'd like to hear from you on this. Are you considering growing hemp, or are you growing hemp now? What challenges do you face as a hemp farmer? What things have you had to overcome in order to grow this crop? If you're considering doing it, what's the appeal? Why are you thinking about getting into it? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. You can also join us via email at ideas@WPR.org. We will continue our conversation with Shelby Ellison in just a moment. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. 1,400 Wisconsin farmers applied to grow industrial hemp in Wisconsin this year, a big increase from the 250 applications in 2018. We're talking about industrial hemp farming in Wisconsin with Shelby Ellison, assistant faculty associate at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. You can find links to information about hemp farming, including upcoming field days, on the Morning Show page at our website, WPR.org. Are you a hemp farmer in Wisconsin? What are the challenges you've faced? How's this year's crop looking? Maybe you're considering becoming a hemp farmer. What questions do you have about getting started? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. Two great ways to get in touch. Let's go to the phones and hear from Brian in Viroqua. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Shelby. Thank you for explaining the differences between the three industrial hemps at the beginning of the show. That was very helpful for most people to understand. So thank you for that. And I've seen you on some of the extension videos that you've got on hemp. So thank you for the work you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm a organic biodynamic hemp farmer, so I'm growing industrial CBD hemp. And I have a question or comment, or a comment about the licensing program. In Wisconsin right now, you can get a license for $350 for 30 acres, correct?
Correct.
And if you go over 30 acres, it goes down to $5 an acre.
It's $5 for each additional acre.
All right. So this bill was supposed to be able to help farmers, and especially small farmers. If the bill is going to continue to help small farmers and not let large farmers come in at $5 an acre for the after 30 acres for the fee, I think the fee should be about $500 for every additional acre. That way it will ensure it that it stays with the small farmers. And this is the industrial CBD hemp, not the grain or the fiber. That'd be a different story. But I think they should make a concession to the small farmers to help them, because so much of it is hand labor. So what do you think of that comment?
First of all, I don't have any say really in the Wisconsin's hemp pilot program. But one thing I do know is that, you know, with the passing of the Farm Bill, pretty much every state has made their own state guidelines for their research pilot programs. But now with the 2018 Farm Bill, there's going to be more, I think, of a consensus across the states when we have federal guidelines. So what is written in our pilot program will change soon, more than likely. So I would just say to voice your opinion and make the argument you're making here for how you think the licensing and registration fees should be divvied up. But I do think that the current prices will change next year.
Brian, that'd be a great question for you to pose to your local state assembly representatives and state senator. Shelby, you're working on research on growing hemp in Wisconsin through UW-Madison. Tell us more about the research project you're doing.
Yeah, so I'm part of a very collaborative team, which has been great. We have people in horticulture, agronomy, and plant pathology, and all kinds of people working in extension. But the goal this year is to get a better understanding of how to grow hemp in Wisconsin. So we're trying for all the different types of hemp that are grown, looking at what the nutrient requirements are. So we have different studies where we apply different rates of nitrogen. We have studies where we're looking at how row spacing affects total yield of the plant and weed competition. We're also just looking at a lot of different varieties to see what does well here. These materials are coming from a more dry environment, so we're going to have different issues with having a wetter summer and a wetter fall. So things like molds that might not be as prevalent in some of the Colorado operations will be here. So we're going to just see what works best. And then hopefully the longer-term goal is to establish some breeding programs through the university where we can develop materials that are very suited for Wisconsin.
And one of the things you're looking at is how various ag practices affect THC levels in the plants. What are you finding there?
Yeah, so the interesting thing with that is we don't have any results yet because the plants are just flowering right now. So we're starting to collect our tissue samples.
And we'll collect those pretty much across the month of September while the plants are flowering, or if they're the grain types going into seed, to kind of understand how THC as well as the other cannabinoids increase over time, and if those different farming inputs, such as nitrogen, it cause any change between kind of the control and those inputs. So stay tuned.
Okay. Well, Tim in Tomahawk has a question about extraction. Tim, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning. Yeah, I was wondering if there's any statutory thresholds for extractions. Is that a problem? In essence, is the production of benzene a problem during the process of extraction?
I missed the last thing. Is the benzene?
Tim says extraction often causes benzene. Is there a concern with that?
So, yes, I would say the large concern right now is that a lot of the people that have the processing licenses are doing things very different. And while there are some regulations, it's not nearly to the standards of other food and beverage and other supplement markets. So I can't speak to any particular problem, and some people are doing it, you know, spot on, but there's a lot of variability because it's a pretty unregulated market right now. And until kind of the USDA and FDA make their guidelines for how to proceed in this market, you have to be very careful with what you're purchasing, and hopefully you have some traceability of who processed that. Do you trust that processor and where their hemp came from?
Tim, thanks. Thanks for that that question. And Shelby, this is an industry that's in its infancy, and there's still enough legal limbo around it federally that a lot's going to be changing over the next few years. So whatever's true today may not be true tomorrow or next year. Wouldn't that be fair to say?
That is absolutely correct.
We're approaching harvest time when hemp growers will be bringing in the crop. WMTV in Madison recently spoke to a hemp and growing processing company in Columbus about the problem of labor.
Last year we had about 3 acres here, and this year we have 200.
Everybody's facing the same challenge, is lack of labor. We had about 30 people during the harvest. So, I mean, today we have about 15 people.
How common are labor shortages surrounding hemp farms nearing the harvest season, Shelby? Do we need more workers?
Yeah, it's very labor intensive. Right now there's not really any designed mechanical harvesting method. So these things are huge when you're getting them out of the field. The plants are, you know, Christmas tree size. They can be 6 to 8 feet tall, and pretty much you're going through and chopping them at the base, and they have very, very, very strong stalks. So you need some, you can use a chainsaw if you want to, but it's doing that. And then you want to treat the plant with care, because all of the material that you're trying to sell is from a part of the plant called a trichome, which is this fragile little brittle part of the floral structure that if you drag your plant on the ground or if you're too rough with it, that's going to start falling off if it's dry at all. So you have to be gentle, and then you're going to try to harvest the flowers if you want high concentration of CBD. So that's all. There are machines that are butters and buckers that take the flower material off, but still got to gather it and dry it, and it's very, very labor intensive.
And what's holding farmers back from getting started in industrial hemp production? Is it money?
Yes, I think so. I mean, in some cases, I think it was also very hard to find clones or seeds this spring, just because a lot of people sold out of their materials. But I think that it's a large upfront cost for a lot.
What about crop insurance? It seems this is a case maybe where the law hasn't caught up to the facts on the ground. Can farmers get crop insurance for their hemp?
So maybe not all farmers were able to this year. I think that it will be kind of the hail insurance or the weather insurance where you insure what is in the ground will be more prevalent moving forward. However, if your crop goes hot, which means that it has more than 0.3% THC by dry weight at harvest, that is not going to be insured anytime soon. So that would be a total crop loss.
Okay. Well, Wisconsin's dairy industry has been struggling for a number of years. You think maybe there's hope for hemp growers? Is this going to maybe we're going to be Wisconsin's hemp land?
Well, I don't think we should replace dairy, but I think that it is a great alternative crop for Wisconsin to grow and a good crop to put into rotation. And we have a nice history with it. So.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, Shelby Ellison, for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you.
Shelby Ellison is an assistant faculty associate in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, currently coordinating hemp research and extension efforts through the university. Up next, the news. Then we continue our discussion about hemp and learn more about CBD products. I'm John Munson. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about Wisconsin's rapidly growing hemp industry. In this segment, we shift focus from farming to one of the end products of the hemp industry, CBD or cannabidiol. You know, whether online or in storefronts, purveyors of this hemp product are popping up everywhere. But what do we know about CBD products and their uses? How can we determine the quality of what we're buying or how it was produced? These are just a few of the questions we'll ask in this segment of the Morning Show. CBD users, why do you use this product? What's it do for you? Or do you use other hemp products? What do you buy? Do you sell CBD or other CBD CBD oil or other CBD products? Why did you start selling them? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, send an email to ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Amy Miles is the Director of Forensic Toxicology at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. Good morning, Amy, and welcome to the Morning Show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
First of all, what is CBD?
CBD is just one of those components within, as you said, we find it in the hemp plant and within THC itself. And from what little we know of it, there is potential for efficacy for use within seizures, but there's a lot that we don't know about it.
So, and it's really up until very, very recently been very difficult even to do research into this, hasn't it?
Absolutely. I think anytime we tag on any component of THC and just trying to use it in humans for research, it becomes very difficult to do any sort of research. So it has been a really slow moving and growing area of research, but clearly it's much needed because as we're finding, people are wanting to use it and hoping to use it, but we really don't have all the answers we need to say whether or not it is useful and efficacy for whatever or efficacious for whatever they need it for. And that it's safe. There are questions about drug-drug interactions with CBD and drugs that people may be taking that are prescribed by their doctor.
Well, and I mean, there's a lot of anecdotal information out there. And, of course, the Internet is a great source for that kind of thing. So sometimes it's pretty difficult to find out for sure what's really going on here. As I understand it, CBD is the non-psychoactive portion of the hemp plant. So that means that you wouldn't have any of the euphoric effects that we associate with marijuana. Is there THC present in CBD products?
Yes, and by most statutes within many states, there is an allowable amount. Usually it's about 0.3%, and that's what it is in Wisconsin as well. So it is possible to have CBD with a very low percentage of THC, and in those cases, you still are able to remove the psychoactive component, there's just not enough THC in that CBD to cause any sort of impairment or psychoactive outward experience. And so in those terms, it's okay, but we still don't know, as far as that CBD drug itself, we don't know the full characterization of that drug, and we don't understand how it really does affect the body.
But we're not going to get high or suddenly want to eat an entire bag of Cheetos.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's your Tuesday night, but likely, likely no. Usually, okay. When we look at this, those that are using CBD, there is no effect in those similar terms of THC.
Does CBD show up in a blood test? Can police ticket drivers for CBD like they can for THC?
That's actually a really good question, and that's what we get asked the most, and that seems to be what people are most concerned about. And the bottom line is no. If you're truly using a product that is 0.3% THC or less, because you're not going to be impaired, you won't be pulled over for operating while intoxicated. You may be pulled over for a taillight out or something like that, but you wouldn't be in trouble, essentially, with the law. Mm-hmm. Where it gets difficult is we have a hard time on field kits. So when officers want to test plant material or something that they found on a scene to see if it's positive for a certain drug, because of the sensitivity of those field kits, they still will register positive for THC, even if you have a CBD product. So you have to be very careful about that. And we're training law enforcement so they understand and they know. And then from a laboratory perspective, from a forensic side, we test for the specific components of THC. So if you're taking CBD, we will only be looking for THC, and it wouldn't be used against you if you had CBD there.
What about random drug tests? A lot of people in the workplace are subject to them. Could CBD show up in one of these?
No. Usually the way the metabolic profile happens for CBD is a little bit different than THC in that the metabolites are not the same. So when you do random workplace drug testing, they're looking for specific metabolites of THC, which are different than those for CBD. So they aren't supposed to cross-react with a lot of those tests that they use for things like workplace drug testing.
Why are people buying CBD products? What are they typically used for?
Well, if you ask five people, they will tell you five different things. And I think a lot of that is just, you know, people are seeing CBD as this potential to cure everything, and we don't know what it cures. So I think for some people, maybe they've been dealing with an issue for a long term and can't get a resolution for it. And so, you know, why not try CBD and see if it helps? At the end of the day, though, it really is a buyer beware, because as scientists, we don't know enough about CBD to tell you whether or not it's okay that you take CBD with your antidepressant or you take CBD with your anti-anxiety medication. So people really do need to be very careful about what they're buying, who they're buying it from, and how they're using it.
What are the different forms that CBD takes that can be purchased?
We've seen oils. We've seen plant material that looks like THC or cannabis that we would typically consider to be illicit. You can get it in powders. You can get it in pills. You can get it in teas. So there are pretty much any form you want to receive it in, it's available.
Amy Miles is the director of forensic toxicology at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. We're talking this hour about Wisconsin's growing hemp industry. CBD, one of the outputs, a major output of hemp in the state. We're talking about its use and some of the issues surrounding the lack of research and knowing exactly what this stuff does. We have a caller from Lodi. Chrissy is with us on the morning show. Chrissy, good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here. I'm calling because I am a safety manager with a school bus company, and of course, CBD oil becoming all the rage. Everyone wants to try it for whatever ailments they may have. I checked about a year ago with our medical review officer, which is to a little backstory here. A medical review officer is someone that reviews drug tests for our drivers that may go in for random tests or for pre-employment drug screens. And if we have a trace of THC in our system in the CBD or in the CDL driving world, commercial driver's license world, whether you drive a Class A type vehicle or Class D, whatever it may be, a trace is as good as you no longer have an endorsement, you no longer have your license. So when people ask me, can I try this for a backache or whatever ailment I might have, I say at your own risk, because if you test positive on a random, it's been nice working for you, you know, working with you, and they'll be on their way looking for a new career or job or whatever. So I just wanted to get that point across, because there is that possibility of having that trait.
Chrissy, thanks for your comment. Amy Miles?
You make a very good point, Chrissy. And I think that just comes back to, if you're truly taking a CBD product and there is no THC in it, you won't test positive for those random tests that happen in workplace. However, the big caveat there is you don't really necessarily know that CBD product that you purchased, does it really not have THC in it? And this actually sort of speaks to that larger issue we're seeing right now in public health with the vaping, where individuals are willing to buy products off the internet or from wherever and use them and not fully understand what's in them and, you know, what could be harmful to them. So it's really no different with these CBD products. I've heard several people that procure them and sell them that they have them tested. And when I say to them, well, what's the testing scope? What do they test for when they're testing your products? They can't answer that. So if you don't know what's in that product, you don't know if you truly are using something that's absent of THC and other things.
So in terms of regulation, CBD would be similar to what? Vitamins and other supplements which aren't really regulated by the Food and Drug Administration?
Yep, you're absolutely correct. There is zero regulation on any of these products. So people just need to be really careful about what they're buying and just know that even the person that's selling it to you, while they may have a report there that says it only contains 0.3% THC, that doesn't mean there aren't other things in there. I have a colleague from Virginia that had her grad students do a project where they went around and bought a dozen different CBD products around their area. And over half of them had something in there that the person that was selling them didn't realize was in there. So unless we're doing true forensic testing where we're doing a really big scope for drugs and looking for a lot of different entities, we really don't know, because no one is regulating these products.
So it really is a market situation of caveat emptor. The consumer needs to really do a lot of research and legwork on their own. We're talking about the growing hemp industry in Wisconsin this hour on the morning show, focusing on CBD or cannabidiol as one of the products from hemp plants. Amy Miles is our guest. She's the director of forensic toxicology at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. If you have a question about CBD, maybe you sell CBD, maybe you use CBD, maybe if you're a doctor, have you prescribed it for your patients? What do you know about what you're using? 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Hemp is a growing industry in Wisconsin, and one of its outputs is CBD. Amy Miles is here to help us understand what CBD is and isn't and how it's regulated. She's the director of forensic toxicology at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. If you have questions about CBD, this is the hour to call, 800-642-1234. We have Ruth with us in Madison. Ruth, good morning. You're on The Morning Show.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a master's in public health, and I've been following the CBD and cannabidiol research for about 20 years now. And I think it's really important that we point out that although the United States is fairly behind the times in this research, there is international entities, Israel, Mexico, Luxembourg, lots of places in the world where we have very reputable research going on, And I just wanted to point out a research resource for that, and that is the International Association for Cannabidiol Medicine. If people want to look at what's going on in other places in the world, I think it would be very valuable. Yes, we're really behind the times in the research here because of the Class A distinction that we have on cannabis, but there is support coming in from other countries, and I think the United States would do well to not be so arrogant to think that we're the only ones who have research going on. So okay. That's my comment. Thank you so much.
Ruth, thank you for the call and the comment. Amy Miles?
Yeah, and it is a great comment. Ruth is correct. The U.S. often lags behind just because we put in so many blockades and regulations when we want to test things on human subjects. But as a scientist, I don't limit my research for literature to the United States. And so for most of us, when we're looking for answers on any drug, we turn to things like PubMed and things like that, where publications from peer-reviewed journal articles are available. And especially because the State Laboratory of Hygiene is part of the university, I have access to all of that. So we do a really good job of culling all of that literature. And we also are very careful about paying attention to those papers that aren't peer-reviewed, because you kind of run that risk of, you know, you don't want to be biased. So I always try to be, you know, I want to know more about CBD, good, bad, and ugly, and whatever that is. But I also want it to be framed within a peer-reviewed publication.
Let's go next to Karen in Winona, Minnesota. Karen, good morning. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. I'm an integrative physician in Winona, Minnesota, and I treat people with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and post-treatment Lyme disease who suffer from a lot of pain and insomnia. And maybe 5 years ago, my patients started coming to me with the product saying that it really helped reduce their pain and insomnia. So the last 3 years, all the medical conferences I've gone to, there's been really reputable speakers speaking on the research of it. And so I have recommended it to my patients both as a rub-on hemp oil treatment, and it comes orally in a liposomal formula and in capsules. And it really helps people with their pain and with their sleep.
Karen, thanks so much for that call. Amy Miles, what about the research into this? I mean, are we looking at doing clinical trials? How can we answer some of the questions that people have and confirm some of the anecdotal evidence that we see?
Yeah, without any sort of human subject or human performance type of research and testing, it's really difficult to answer all of those questions. And I agree. I hear a lot of those anecdotal information too. I know people with fibromyalgia. I've had one person that uses CBD who says it works really well, and somebody else that says it does nothing for them. So I'm not here to say that CBD couldn't be the right choice for people. My cautionary tale is simply, you know, if you're taking CBD plus the medications for your fibromyalgia plus, you know, your sleep aid plus, you know, whatever else it is that you're taking, that's the sort of research we really don't know yet. We have no idea what sort of interactions occur. And so we just need to be really cautious and careful as we proceed with this.
So what needs to change to make CBD products safer or perhaps consumers more knowledgeable about them?
I think from the product standpoint that we see right now, it just would be great to have better regulation. You know, you see people buying things off the internet, they have no idea what it is or what's in them, and there's no control over that. Mm-hmm. Same thing with a lot of the places in local areas that are selling CBD. There's nothing wrong with them. They're doing a good thing. They're selling a product. But it's just, it's like you said with the vitamins, there is no oversight or anybody sort of looking out for the consumer to make sure that everyone is protected.
Amy Miles, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Amy Miles is the Director of Forensic Toxicology at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. Wisconsin farmers have faced many challenges this season, from the ongoing trade war to unfavorable weather. Hope Kerwin visited a field day in western Wisconsin to hear how farmers are adapting to more challenging conditions.
Damon Smith is a plant pathologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. In a cornfield near Black River Falls, he points to a section on the edge of the field where the corn stalks get shorter and paler in color. Smith says that's where floodwater settled earlier this spring.
As the water receded, some of this corn was able to emerge, and then some of the corn in the middle here never did emerge. It just pretty much rotted in the ground. Yeah.
Much of Wisconsin was inundated with rain this spring, on top of a wet fall and winter. That meant many farmers had to wait longer than usual to plant, and fields ended up uneven, like this one in Jackson County. And Smith says delayed planting set farmers up for even more challenges later in the season.
We tend to look at specific growth stages to make some of our fungicide application decisions, for instance. And when you have a field that ranges two or three growth stages, so when do you pull the trigger,
Making good decisions about when to apply chemicals or other management practices isn't just about best protecting crops from diseases. It also helps farmers save money. Jamie Paff is the agriculture educator for UW Extension in Jackson County.
When you're spraying multiple fields, and you have to put on more than one application, that could make or break the bank, really, for some people. So they want to do the best they can with their crops, but because the bottom line is so important, they're really trying to get the timing right.
With lower yields expected, PAF says saving on inputs has been top of mind for producers, especially those carrying a lot of debt after years of low commodity prices. It's what Ray Butke from Maryland, Wisconsin, is most worried about. These days, he rents out most of his 500 acres to neighboring farms, and he's concerned about neighbors who borrowed during times of high prices in order to grow their operations.
They're having a hard time getting their crops in, and they've been, some have had to sell some assets in order to keep going. And I tell you what, it's just, if it turns around a little bit, they'll be all right. But some of them, it's not going to be able to.
Butke says farmers do have one thing on their side, new tools and access to information to help them keep input costs down. Damon Smith from UW-Madison says more farmers are reaching out to him on social media. He's got an active Twitter account where farmers tweet photos from their fields or ask questions about certain diseases. And he's developed smartphone apps to help producers decide when and how to apply chemicals. Tools like these will become more important as Wisconsin likely sees more frequent wet weather thanks to climate change. This year's rainy spring was an anomaly, but Smith points out the state has seen prolonged wet weather at the end of summer for several years now.
We've been in these patterns where we've been generally below normal in terms of temperature, but above normal, of course, on rainfall. And when we have years like that, it's very conducive for many of our fungal diseases. And so we've really, struggled in corn and soybeans, especially over the last several seasons.
Last year, a fungal disease called tar spot swept through cornfields in southern Wisconsin. It's already been confirmed in 9 counties so far this season. Ben Nestingen from Blair, Wisconsin, says he uses Smith's smartphone apps when he can get service. Nestingen helps his family grow corn and alfalfa for their livestock, but this is the first year he's planted his own acres of corn. He says the challenging weather hasn't changed his mind about his career.
If you want to keep going with farming, you're just going to have to deal with the ups and downs. And some years it's going to be good, some years it's not so good.
Nestingen says he's hopeful better corn prices are in the near future, and farmers will get back to the good years once again. Hope Kerwin, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Just ahead, as summer winds down, we're looking at last-minute ideas to catch a few rays this Labor Day weekend. Grab the sunglasses and the sunblock. We're headed to the beach. This is The Morning Show. I'm John Munson on the Ideas Network.